I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. The Kansas Board of Regents approved a 10-year strategic agenda in 2010. The goal? To improve the state's public higher education system. With 1 year left, we're going to check in on the wins and losses of the Foresight 2020 plan. Today, the president of the Kansas Board of Regents is here. I'll ask Blake Flanders about student loan debt, slouching college enrollment numbers, and changing workforce needs. Then, it's been over 125 years since Kansas City's system of parks and boulevards was first laid out. How that plan is working out in the 21st century, and what we need to do to keep it viable into the 22nd. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Talk about higher education in Kansas these days, and the word crisis is often mentioned. State funding for colleges and universities has actually dropped since 2009 by about $70 million. That's led Blake Flanders, the head of the Kansas Board of Regents, to conclude that the system was at the breaking point. There's another problem. With unemployment low and tuition rising year after year, the growth in the number of Kansans earning a college education is grinding to a halt. In 2010, the board approved a 10-year strategic agenda for the state's public higher education system. It's called Foresight 2020. Today, we'll get an update as to how well the state is meeting all the goals laid out there. With us is the aforementioned Blake Flanders, who is president and CEO of the Kansas Board of Regents. Blake, it's nice to have you here. Welcome to Up to Date.
Well, great to be here, Steve, and I appreciate spending some time this morning just really talking about our higher education system and more importantly, what the system can really do for Kansas and the region.
Do you think higher education in Kansas, Blake, is still at the breaking point?
Well, I would say that our system is strong despite all the financial challenges, but really what we need to look at is the state support and how that could help actual individual Kansans really participate in higher education, which is really needed because of the economic changes. You know, I look in terms of how are we going to finance higher education? Is it going to be tuition increases that really affect every individual Kansan? Or are we going to provide some state support so that we can stabilize those tuition rates across Kansas?
You know, speaking of state support, do you believe that state support is what it needs to be to offer Kansans the type of higher learning opportunities that they deserve?
No, I think what we've seen over time is that at one time we were a very low tuition state. So our cost of tuition was extremely reasonable. And at the time, slight tuition increases probably weren't that bad for the system or for individuals. They were just very slight. As we've went on a 10-year, really, 10 years of not funding higher education and actually reducing the funding to higher education when costs have continued to rise, now we're actually relatively expensive. If you look at the University of Kansas now, you know, one of the more expensive universities in the public universities, rather, in the entire Big 12. You know, and so our mission is to really keep higher education affordable, because what we know is that in order to participate in today's economy, with all of the changes we've had in the economy, you need some credential beyond high school.
But how do you keep tuition low if state support is dropping or maybe even flatlining? That becomes a tough challenge for folks like you.
It's very difficult, because in the Foresight plan, one of our pillars is to have excellent universities. And in order to maintain that excellence, you have to have the support from somewhere. So if the support doesn't come from the state, then we've looked at tuition increases to really cover those costs that every business and every organization and every family sees in their own budgets. costs for increased health insurance, increased utilities, all of those items that really you don't have a lot of control over.
You know, what's happened to the image of higher education? And I'm not just referring to Kansas, Blake, but also Missouri. When I covered state legislatures in Topeka back in the early 90s, you know, higher education was respected, maybe even revered by most lawmakers. Today, you can't say that. And I'm wondering, what's happened to the public image? Why did things change?
Yeah, I think that's difficult to answer. And we've actually seen that happen nationally. You know, depending on ideology, some would say the system doesn't align with my political views. Others would might say, I think it's too expensive. The fact of the matter is, as I talk to Kansas legislators, most legislators support higher education. It just depends on where is that in terms of priority. Mm-hmm. So if you support higher education, but if it's your eighth priority, then typically there's not enough funding left at the end of the day to support that enterprise. And really, you know, my sense is that it's really not about supporting the universities or our high-quality community and technical college system. It's really about how are we going to provide education to individual Kansans, not just for that individual, but also talent for businesses and the economic growth mm-hmm. and prosperity of our state.
You know, I think it's only fair to point out that Governor Kelly has proposed a small bump for higher education. A press release from the Board of Regents yesterday said this: when Kansas legislators return for a veto session, they are planning to consider restoration of funding to higher education. What kind of feedback, how likely is that restoration to occur this session?
You know, I think it's very likely, not the full restoration, but part of the restoration. So since 2009, if we just take the universities, not the entire system, but just the state universities, we're down about $70 million. Mm-hmm. And what I always tell people is that's not a parlor trick. That's not adjusted for inflation. That's just real dollars.
Yes.
Where we were in 2009 with state support and where we are today. Now, here's what we know. Certainly the cost haven't decreased, and in fact they've increased many times faster than the consumer price index just because of our market basket of goods that we purchase from. So I think it's very likely that legislators are going to consider at least part of that restoration back. And so, you know, our ask for the state universities has been $50 million just to move us not all the way, but just part of the way back to 2009.
Blake Flanders, President and CEO of the Kansas Board of Regents, is my guest. Let's turn to Foresight 2020, Blake. I mentioned it in the opening. This is the long-term plan the board laid out in 2010. Tell me, what was the idea behind it, and what was the board trying to achieve there?
You know, I think it was a great initial step for the board to say, let's get some numeric goals and some metrics and priorities for the system and measure how we're doing. And so the Foresight 2020 plan has really served us well, and we're coming to the end of that 10-year cycle. But the real positive piece of that is it was really had three pillars. We wanted to increase the attainment, or what I would say is Kansans who have some post-secondary credential earned mm-hmm. beyond high school. Mm-hmm. We want to increase attainment. We want to improve the alignment of our programming to the needs of the Kansas economy. That was the second pillar.
To what businesses need out there. Yeah.
Sure. And the third pillar was to keep our state universities excellent because we govern the state universities. And so really three pillars. It's been a really, really good plan just to track our progress.
Well, let's talk about one pillar and the notion of how many Kansans are going through or were receiving some kind of higher education. You know, the public colleges, universities granted nearly 41,000 undergraduate degrees and certificates last year. That's about roughly the same as 5 years ago. It's about 10,000 short from where you want it to be at this time based on the Foresight 2020 plan. In fact, your report states that the number of undergraduate certificates and degrees awarded across Kansas higher ed must increase to about 53,000 a year if the demand is going to produce enough graduates to meet workforce requirements. And that number, again, was short of 41,000 last year. That strikes me as a pretty serious shortcoming.
It really has been a shortfall. As we went out, we held many focus groups with business leaders and actually parents and families, so separate focus groups across the state of Kansas. And we were in Dodge City, Garden City, Colby, Hayes, Wichita, all over the entire state. And what we heard from businesses is they were the ones at a crisis. They were the ones at a breaking point in terms of needing talent. And we know that the Kansas economy requires this number to really be robust. And so that's why I think it's so important that we have state support to keep tuition affordable so that we can get more Kansans and more first-generation Kansans into higher education and into these occupations that can really help our Kansas businesses be competitive.
But how do you reach that 53,000 number if you're tracking at about 41,000? I mean, those numbers are cumulative. You're falling short by 12 or 13,000 a year. That's going to be a significant consequence as the years pass here.
Yeah, so I think we have to look at a couple of three different strategies. One of them is we need to recruit more students. And that probably means also recruiting students from out of state and becoming more aggressive to bring more talent into Kansas. And then second, we need to retain the students who are already at the university. So we need to—
And you've made progress on that front.
We have made progress in terms of graduation rates and retention. And so there's been a big focus there. And then third, we need to look at how can we articulate credit from other prior learning experiences. We're leading the nation right now in terms of working with Army University at Fort Leavenworth and the military to say, if you went through a military experience, how should that count in terms of credit towards your college degree? Mm-hmm. And so we need to continue to explore those more non-traditional methods, too, to serve our adult population.
This was interesting. Your reports break down enrollment by color of students, and you're looking at white student enrollment dropping by 12% since 2010. Hispanic enrollment is up. African American enrollment tracking slightly up. Why have the number of white students dropped as dramatically as they have?
Well, one thing we've seen is our Kansas population is changing. And so as we increase the percentage of Hispanics, as an example, we know that you know, another percentage is going to decrease slightly. You know, what we really need to take away from those numbers is we need to serve our Hispanic students better than we have traditionally. And we're taking steps to do that.
The numbers would reflect some success there again.
There has been small successes. We need to accelerate that. You know, I believe that the different kinds of supports needed because many of those students may be from families whose parents do not have a college degree. And so just in terms of navigating our system, how do we make things easier? How do we make our system friendlier to those populations whom we may have not served that well in the past?
Blake Flanders is here. He's president and CEO of the Kansas Board of Regents. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. You've also had some success, Blake, in technical education. What's happening on that front?
There's been really a renaissance in terms of career and technical education, and I think
that's nationwide.
Nationwide, I think a recognition, and rightfully so, that we have many great occupations in our trades and technical fields that people certainly get really, really good jobs. You know, we traditionally always served, in just in terms of high school students, we've had a high school initiative where we had traditionally served between 3,500 and 3,800 students a year that would come from, be a junior and senior in high school and go into technical education. We're almost at 12,000 now. So we've really had an emphasis there. Our community colleges and technical colleges have done a great job just in terms of not only promoting those careers in career and technical education, but also then being sure those students complete and get into the workforce.
Is the rise in technical education students in part due to the rising cost of tuition at the four-year schools?
You know, I think that's hard to say. I'm not certain of that. I do know there's been a really a new respect for those jobs. I think for many years, we had parents and families maybe not want their kid to go into a career in technical education field. Yeah. I think now that's recognized as a valued post-secondary pathway. And certainly we have many students who go into career and technical education, go into the workforce for a couple of years, and then come back and earn a baccalaureate degree. And that's been a very good pathway for many.
This was interesting to me. Technical education numbers are up. Community college enrollments are down. What explains that?
So I think traditionally with community colleges, their enrollments have really been a function of how the economy is doing. And so, interestingly, as the economy does really well and people are maybe working a second shift, they don't enroll in an evening class at a community college. And so our community colleges are really working to say, okay, we know that with the economy, and we like a good economy and a strong economy, we know with a strong economy, typically our enrollments will flatten or be down a bit. How do we do a better job retaining those students and graduating the ones who we have enrolled?
Yeah, we're seeing that with the four-year schools, right? The unemployment rate is low. Young people can get jobs, so they're going that way, at least some of them, as opposed to diving into four-year colleges and universities.
Yeah, so what we know is it's really great when we have young people that are able to access employment right out of high school. But traditionally, what history tells us is at the first downturn, those are usually the first jobs that are laid off. Mm-hmm. And in fact, what we're seeing now is our economy continues to change. And since the recession, about 99% of the jobs created actually require some post-secondary credentials. So some credential beyond high school. It may not necessarily be a baccalaureate degree, but it will be either a welding certificate or maybe it's a certified nurse aide certificate. Perhaps it is a baccalaureate degree. But interestingly, of those 99% of the new jobs created, 72% of those have required a baccalaureate degree. So what we know is the economy is changing, and we need to position our university and community and technical college system to meet those needs.
You know, a new report from a group called LendEDU shows that average student debt, loan debt, Blake, in Kansas increased roughly 20% from 2007 to 2017. That's adjusted for inflation. How do you enroll more students when the cost barrier continues to increase in the way it does? The stigma surrounding higher education, not just in Kansas, when it comes to cost and debt, is really becoming very difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, we have about 30% of our graduates who don't have any debt. And so as we focus on the 70% that do have debt, and if that debt's around $25,000 or mid-20s, really we still view it as a really good investment. Many people, that would be what they'd buy a car, their first car for. And certainly, as you know, the minute you drive it off the lot, it's going to depreciate, where a college education is going to return you about $1 million over your lifetime, mm-hmm. More earning. So,
but lots of kids are coming out 50K in the hole, 90K in the hole. It's, you know, I see it at UMKC where I teach.
Sure. So that's not to say that debt is not a concern, mm-hmm. because it is a concern. And that's why we're advocating so powerfully for state support. The way that we can keep that we can stabilize these numbers and flatten that debt curve is to ensure that we keep tuition low.
You know, what do you think when you hear certain politicians, I'm thinking of Elizabeth Warren, saying that we should forgive student debt? Is that a realistic solution in your mind?
You know, that's something that I candidly haven't studied the numbers and see what impact they would have on the state budget. Mm-hmm. What I know in Kansas is generally if something is not worth – if someone pays nothing for something, generally they don't hold it in as high as esteem. I don't know if that's the case here, but I certainly think that would need a lot more study. At mm-hmm. present, you know, we've had difficulty, and I know our policymakers have had difficulty funding higher education just to keep up with the cost of inflation. I think it would be very difficult to just find the resources to forgive every student loan.
I know you get this question occasionally, Blake. Does Kansas have too many public universities?
You know, I do get that question once in a while, and certainly I think as we look at that landscape, that's really a question for policymakers and actually legislators. We wouldn't have any authority to close a university at the Kansas Board of Regents.
Is that that's a political legislative decision?
Sure, that it is. I'm one to say I think our universities, because they've had one governing board, are really very different. So it's a very different experience and a special experience at each university. We have different programming and different specializations, and I think that's what makes our system strong.
But if costs have become such a huge obstacle here and state support, and all these schools have some of the same costs with maintenance and salaries and everything else, why isn't that being considered more widely? Just the politics of it?
Well, I think that there's many ways to save money beyond maybe the more radical move of closing a university. Our universities right now cooperate on so many items, just even in terms of purchasing and mm-hmm. In terms of buying insurance and all kinds of items that I think you can save a lot of dollars without necessarily closing a location. And in fact, we heard from the people in Southwest Kansas who do not have a university that they'd like to have more educational opportunities right in their backyard to serve their citizenry.
So build a new university.
We're not building a new university, but what we would do is we would partner perhaps with the community colleges there and offer opportunities to complete baccalaureate pathways in Southwest Kansas.
You know, Blake, we talked about one of the pillars of Foresight 2020, you know, better aligning higher education with the needs of the work businesses and the needs of the workforce out there of the workforce of 2019. What is being done on that front to sort of better realign what kinds of students and what they learn so they can do the jobs of today in Kansas?
We've had a couple of initiatives that I'd really, you know, like to highlight to say how have we helped that alignment. We heard from and they've required state partnerships. So we heard years ago that we're not producing enough engineers. And so the legislature says we're going to invest in engineering, but what you need to do is we were at 875 graduates. We want you to increase in 10 years to 1,365 graduates. Mm-hmm. Well, the system in just 8 years is over 1,500 graduates.
Wow. Wow.
So really over-delivered in that way. The same with nursing. In 2006, we've had a registered nursing shortage for years. 2006, the legislature came in and said, we'd like to increase the capacity by 250 students. So just take 250 more enrollments. Our system actually now graduates 250 more students,
wow.
Not just so those kinds of alignment strategies with legislative partnership, I think, have shown in the past a lot of success.
The Foresight 2020 plan sort of expires this year. Is there a second plan in the works to continue that kind of focus going forward?
We are developing a new plan. As I previously mentioned, we've had several focus groups across Kansas to really listen to what businesses are saying, what parents and students might be saying. And we're moving to really look and see what the university and community and technical college system, all of our higher ed system, can do for Kansas families.
Mm-hmm.
How can we help provide talent and innovation to Kansas businesses? And how can we move forward our state with the economic prosperity we need?
You know, a final point, I wanted to ask you about athletic contracts. The regions just approved a new policy, Blake, that requires a top regions official to approve contracts for head coaches or athletic directors valued at more than $500,000 a year. Frankly, I was surprised there wasn't some review already in play. Should I be surprised?
No, I think we've entrusted many times our CEOs, certainly
the chancellors.
Yes, the chancellor and the presidents of the university to make the best judgments there. This is not actually just to approve contracts. This would be to approve extensions of contracts. And so, as we move into to an area where we just like another set of eyes if we're going to extend contracts in a long-term way, particularly those higher-value contracts.
Is this a sign that the regents are getting nervous at the size of some of these contracts?
No, I don't think there's any nervousness at the size of the contracts.
How could they not be when they top $500,000?
Well, our issue is, you know, what is the return of value for those individuals? You know, the one thing we do know about athletics is it is the front porch to for certainly in Division I to the university. And so I'd hate to try to put a value on the amount of advertisement that athletics does bring in. I'm always amazed at the amount of conversation around athletics versus our core mission of really getting students those post-secondary degrees.
Well, there's free advertising, but when you have a losing football program like you do at KU, does that hurt in the other direction? Does that discourage students from coming to KU because it's got a losing football team?
You know, I don't know. I've never really heard that. I've never heard a student say, I'm not going to the University of Kansas because the football program's losing. You know, way back when I went to Kansas State when they didn't win any games.
Yeah.
And so it didn't deter me from attending an institution. I don't expect that's the case.
That's Blake Flanders. He's president and CEO of the Kansas Board of Regents. Thanks for the good update, Blake. I sure appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Steve.
Time for a break. When we come back here, we'll take a look at Kansas City's famed parks and boulevards. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we are back. I'm Steve Kraske. Monday on the show, a fetal heartbeat abortion bill in Missouri could be laying groundwork to challenge Roe versus Wade. We got an update on the workings in the State House in Jeff City. Hear that conversation at kcur.org/up-to-date. Later this week, he lost his siblings and almost his own life to drug abuse. We'll ask one Kansas City man what finally helped him overcome opioid addiction. That's on Friday's Up to Date here on KCUR. Well, just more than 125 years ago, famed landscape architect George Kessler drew up a framework for a growing Kansas City, calling for a system of parks and boulevards in the 1893 report of the city's Parks Board. So now what? What's needed to keep that system a defining feature of the city? And what's required to keep the parks and boulevard system viable all the way into the next century? These are the questions on the table for our next segment as we visit with Leon Younger. He was Jackson County's Director of Parks and Recreation from 1983 to 88, and he's the founder and president of the Indianapolis-based PROS Consulting that has a vision of being the country's recognized leader in parks and recreation consulting. Leon, welcome home.
Okay.
Welcome back.
Nice Thank to you, have Steve. You.
Yeah. We love our boulevards, no question about it around here. What were they supposed to do when they were first envisioned? What was the idea of building those things?
Well, first of all, most of the was for flood control purposes and for
flood control.
Yeah, for really managing the waterway systems through the communities, so that they didn't necessarily put more pressure on the community, and so flood control was a primary purpose. But then,
how do boulevards help with flood control?
Well, this basically a lot of them are built around stream corridors and also along areas that collect a lot of water. And in the process of doing that, they help to slow down that water, as well as the ability to use them as recreation green space.
So part of it was recreation, maybe part of it was beauty, but part of it had a very practical function, you're saying.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah. Were parks initially, you know, maintained, you know, were they a maintained green space for people so they could escape the heat and dirt and the smell of the city?
Very much so. All of the greenway systems have the ability to walk and to be connected with nature, and it's still relevant today, and people are always looking for places to go that are outside of the traffic or in kind of the bustle of any city, and these provide that opportunity even today.
Do they still have an environmental impact today? You mentioned they helped with flood control back in the day. Do they still have that component attached to them?
Very much so. And, you know, like the Kansas City system here would be enormously difficult to replicate. And the ability to maintain it and the value of it, not as just green space, but also the ability to connect neighborhoods, to really manage along the key boulevards, it still has a value for pleasure driving, even mm-hmm. for people today. When they go into work and they're along a boulevard, there's a certain calming value that goes along with that as well.
You know, across the country, to what extent are our parks and boulevards respected, even revered?
Well, in Kansas City, I mean, it's the backbone of the city, and at least from my perspective, it's always been looked at, not just the boulevards and greenways, but your fountain systems, all the various fountains and monuments that are here. It really frames what Kansas City is.
And we're known for that.
It very much so. And across this country, that's always been how people talk about the system, and the Kansas City system has really matured well. There's some, you know, obviously financial issues that every system, every urban system in the country faces. But the big thing here is that they've really been able to keep those intact and really to the real vision of what Kessler had in mind when he was laying this thing out.
Leon Younger is my guest. He's a former director of Jackson County's Parks and Recreation System. You know, our broad boulevards with green spaces in the middle, still a good idea? I mean, should we be looking to build more of those in the future?
Well, I think so. I mean, if you stay between North Kansas City and South Kansas City, the ability to make the city feel like it's all connected under one kind of vision, it has continued value. Today, you know, a lot of the systems that I work with also incorporate some kind of a really nice trail system through the boulevard system so that people exercise and walk and ride bikes and run on them, that they actually have a recreation value as well. And I know along a lot of the boulevards here in Kansas City, they've got some great playground areas and some picnic places along the trails, as well as in certain areas they've created parks within it. And that was part of Kessler's plan, was always to have parks connected to or a part of the greenway system. So you stopped and you actually got to experience a park as well as through the greenway system.
Now, we were lucky, weren't we, Leon, because we had space. So many major metropolitan communities lack that, and we've got it in abundance out here.
Very much so. And today, just to be able to do, I said this earlier, to replicate that would be impossible. And I think Kansas City would be a totally different city if it didn't have the greenway system and the boulevard system that was in place. And I do believe that the communities that would like to be that, they're catching up. And in all the Kessler cities, whether it's Dallas, Louisville, Indianapolis, Cincinnati, you look at Houston, how they've been able to keep those intact but even expand upon them has really been a powerful tool for those communities.
You said Kessler cities. Did he do this in other cities as well?
Yeah, he the major cities, most of them are in the Midwest, but he also was involved with Dallas and Houston, Louisville, Indianapolis, Cincinnati, Denver. Obviously Kansas City here, And, you know, and people really followed that model because it had so much value in how it framed how people viewed the city and how collection of businesses and homes really followed the Greenway systems.
So he was something of a national figure back in his time then.
Completely. He still is. I mean, his design is still iconic, and that's something that people consistently look at as a value.
Do we know where he got that vision, sort of how he derived at that point?
Well, I know that Olmsted and he were kind of in the same kind of era. And there was obviously different competitions between designers in that time period. Certainly Kessler's plan wasn't always followed an Olmsted plan, but elements of his thinking followed some of what Olmsted did. But probably more importantly, his vision was always much more stronger tied to the Greenway and the stream corridor systems in a community than Olmsted was really strong in specific signature parks in a city. And one of the things that Kessler did is he tied signature parks to the boulevard systems in the towns that he cities that he basically worked in.
That's interesting. You know, it strikes me that, you know, parts of Swope Park obviously have been turned over for the erection of buildings. I'm thinking about Starlight Theater, the Kansas City Zoo, the Lakeside Nature Center, and even more recently, the Southeast Community Center. Should so much green space be given over to structures? Are we barking down the wrong tree here in a way?
Not really. My feeling about it, every system has neighborhood parks, they have community parks, and they have regional or destination parks.
Ah.
And when you create destination parks, you have to have destination experiences. And so it's the combination of experience that create the destination.
So a park is not a park is not a park. You're saying there's different kinds of parks.
And the level of experience. The Swope Park has so many different levels of experiences that it has wide age segment appeal. And in each age group that is represented in the park, they have multiple experience, which creates the destination. You know, a neighborhood park typically has maybe four or five, six different experiences, where a community park might have 10 or 12, but a major signature park like Swope Park has, you know, well into 20, 30 different experiences within a park, and that creates the destination.
So you have this long perspective of Kansas City's parks and boulevards based on your time in Jackson County, and you're working all over the country now, maybe even all over the world. So what would you recommend to Kansas City as you look over, as you come back to town and look over what we have today?
Well, certainly leadership, you know, within the city to value the park system as an enormous economic tool for the city. I think to find some level of more dedicated funding sources for the
That's
system than just the sales tax, because sales tax is so up and down based on the economy, and where there's more of a balance of funding sources to help on the capital side.
And so if it's not sales tax, what should we be looking
well,
at?
Well, typically most park systems either have a dedicated levy for maintenance or operations, or they're set up, you know, the best systems in the country have their own dedicated funding source, or they're a special district. So they're not competing with police and fire and other kind of government components of a city that are hard to compete with.
Yeah.
And to be able to do that, it takes really a really strong commitment by the leadership in the community to want to make parks that special place and frame how the city wants to be viewed. A lot of people look at their downtown as that's the most important thing. Other people look at what are all the things that make Kansas City special. And certainly, you look at your museums, you look at the fountain program. That's so unique across the United States to have that level of commitment. And the parks are part of it, but it needs an investment that consistently demonstrates that value, not just to the people who live here, but people who want to look at the city as a place to bring their business or settle here.
You know, I'm just guessing here, but I imagine one problem for folks like you would be this idea of citizens taking parks for granted and helping them really focus on this value they bring to a community. I'm guessing that for a lot of folks, even listening to this show right now, that's lost on them. It's lost on me a lot of times.
Well, it's easy to take parks for granted because they're always there, and they mature with the city. but they do cost. I mean, the cost to build a mile of trail or build a sports field or update a recreation center or build a new pool is expensive. And in the process of doing that, people don't realize how much asset and the asset value of this park system is enormous. I mean, and to try to maintain it, you have to, and these parks get a lot of use, so they break down. They're not like, you know, your house where you got four people in a house and it takes this much abuse. Think about that when you have, you know, thousands and thousands of visitors that are visiting spaces, and the ability to maintain those, to keep those up, is costly, not only to repair it and update it and keep it in its historic value, but also all the new costs that are associated with anything that the park system builds new.
We're talking about Kansas City's parks and boulevard system with Leon Younger. He'll be discussing this topic at 6:30 this evening at the Kansas City Public Library on the plaza. More information at kclibrary.org. Well, Leon, you've mentioned this notion of the physical, the need for a dedicated funding stream for our parks. What about additions to the system or different ways to use the parks that maybe we haven't quite caught on to here?
Well, I think, you know, obviously, you know, the trails are the number one thing that people want across the United States and every
Is
city.
That right? That
it's
yeah.
Because it's usually free and you can run on it, walk on it, or bike on it, and it really is health related. And so part of what people are really centered on in terms of trails is the ability to feed that health side of people. And also it connects your community. It makes it feel like it's one. It's not just neighborhood based, but it's connected. You feel like you're in one city versus living in a neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I think the big thing, the other thing is the value of recreation and being able to not be one-sided where it's more adult-driven or more youth-driven, the ability to serve a whole community. And Kansas City's got some really good recreation facilities and spaces that they really promote special events at, as well as other kinds of recreation programs like soccer and sports fields and things. But the best systems are balanced, where they understand who their constituencies are, they understand the experiences that they're capable of providing, and they also learn how to kind of live within what they what they own. And one of the most difficult things is saying no gracefully. And sometimes you can't meet everybody's needs, because if there's not enough money to support it, what you end up doing is deplete the system unless money follows it. And the intent is maintaining well what you already own. And a lot of systems are overextended.
Your questions about Kansas City's parks and boulevards, welcome. 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. You know, what do you mean by trails? We're just talking about the value and the importance of trails. Paved, unpaved, urban parts of town, rural parts, what are you talking, all of that?
All of it, yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's loop trails, there's linear trails, and trails typically are, they're in most urban systems they're paved, but in a large regional park they'll have both paved and natural trails.
Mm-hmm.
And so some people like to run more on natural trails than they do on paved, but usually a park system has about 50-50. So I'm from Indianapolis and we have 162 miles of paved trail. But we started out like 25 years ago, we were down around the 20 to 25 miles of trail, and over the last 25 years, the system, even though I'm not there anymore, the system itself has really made a strong impact on putting trails in to link neighborhoods and make the entire city connected. And in just about every town I work in, people are wanting more trails.
I was going to say, there's a real push on here for bike lanes, all of that here, and trails certainly goes along with that. And are people using these trails for commuting more today than they have in the past?
Well, some. You know, I think the big thing is that street trails are more adult trails, because people who ride on those trails are more adults. But when you get inside of a park and you're actually connecting as part of a boulevard system, then people of all different levels can actually use it, whether you're walking, running, or biking. They're more safe trails.
Yeah. I can't help but point out that a lot of people don't get this, that there are 220 parks and 29 lakes in Kansas City. I mean, should the city attempt to maintain that many, or are we overextended?
Well, you know, I think that you have a lot. You have a lot on your plate. And I think anybody more than most cities do. Mm-hmm. And in terms of acres per thousand population.
Partly based on the idea that we're out here in the Midwest, probably, and we have space. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, like every town, you know, the city back in the 70s thought it was going to grow, and then it lost a lot of population, and then it's kind of back now to where it was in population back in the 70s. So the ability to serve that population, I mean, you're well set up for the growth of the city as it continues to grow with the public spaces being already in a preservation state where you actually own them and they can add value to people as the city continues to grow.
You know, Leon, what about public-private partnerships and the future of those when it comes to maintaining a parks and boulevard system? I'm thinking about the Rose Garden at Luce Park, started by a group of women back in the 30s. It continues today through this partnership of the Rose Society, and they established with the Kansas City Parks and Rec Department. Is that a model that
could continue be? You know, you have a couple conservancies here in the city now, but that's going to continue to grow. I'm on the City Park Alliance National Board, and it's really focused on conservancies, and conservancies are the fastest growing partnership organizations within urban park systems in the country.
Kidding.
There's over 2,000 conservancies that are helping park systems either by helping to maintain a portion of a park or entire parks. So you look at Herman Park as an example in Houston, that entire park is maintained by a conservancy, and they just recently got a grant for $50 million by an individual to basically help bring and continue to keep that park as one of the signature spaces in Houston. And so it's kind of like people, like a museum or something where people leave major donations, the conservancies have the capability of supporting a specific park for
our
purpose.
That's really interesting. You know, one of the parks here in town that always it gets me, I just think it's such a magnificent place, is Luce Park.
Yeah.
I mean, that is just such a jewel. And every time I go there, I'm thinking, I need to be here way more often than I am.
It's a great park.
Yeah.
And it's always had a flair for art and really making people really see the value of that space. And it's very well done, and it also has a lot of imagination, and art is a strong piece of that, and it's always had a reputation tied to that.
That city, that park would rank pretty high on a list of parks nationally, think, in terms of just beauty
and
a great
location
place.
And how it's set up, and, you know.
Boy, it's just an amazing place, yeah. Well, again, Leon Younger will be discussing KC's parks and boulevards the next 125 years. He'll do that at 6:30 this evening at the Kansas City Public Library on the plaza. More information, kclibrary.org. Again, he's founder and president of the Indianapolis-based PROS Consulting. Leon, what a pleasure to have you here. Thanks for taking some time.
Thanks, Steve.
You bet. Yesterday in the show, legendary singer-songwriter Randy Crowell was here in the business for 5 decades. He says it took years to overcome his dislike of his own voice. You can hear that conversation at kcur.org/up-to-date. Rodney Crowell, that's what that was. Find and follow us on Twitter. We're at kcurup-to-date. You can follow me at Steve Kraske. And don't forget to like KCUR on Facebook. Tomorrow, an eye-opening look at science. We'll talk with the author of Infinity in the Palm of Your Hand for a fun look at some of the complexities of your body, the world, and beyond. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Devin Davis, and Elizabeth Ruiz. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.